वाणी भवति भारत अध्योधानम् अधर्मशः तदानु श्रीशाम्यः परित्राणाय साधुना विनाशाय च जुष्कृता संस्थापनार्थाय शम्भवामि युगे युगे.
I would like to begin today by asking all of you to just close your eyes and you can relax, try to just disconnect from everything around you. And in your mind's eye, I'd like you to picture a beautiful person. And it may not just be their physical beauty, it may be something about their qualities or their character. I'd like you for a moment to just visualize a beautiful person in your life. See if you can see them. How does seeing them in your mind's eye make you feel? Just take a snapshot of that beautiful person. And maybe just in your heart, just say a thank you to them for the beauty and the joy that they brought to your life. I want you to keep your eyes closed then. Now I want you to think of a really beautiful place. What place is really close to your heart? What place moves your emotions? What memories does that place bring up? For a moment, see if you can just transport yourself to that place and offer your gratitude for divinity arranging that place for you to spend time in. And finally, I'd like you to keep your eyes closed for one last meditation. And I want you to, in your mind's eye, visualize a beautiful moment in your life. A moment which really touched you in a deep way. Relish that moment, be in that moment. Be grateful for that moment. Thank you so much. Yes, you can. Okay, it's nice to see so many smiles on your faces. This is a meditation you can always do sometimes to uplift yourself. As monks, we were actually taught this meditation that oftentimes we, in our consciousness, we tend to allow negativity to rest there more than positivity, more than beauty, more than joy. And somehow or other, if we're able to bring all the beautiful things that have happened in our life and that we've experienced to the forefront, then it really changes our vision. But not just that, it actually opens us up to experiencing more beauty. And when we are hijacked by negativity, then somehow we seem to always see negativity around us. And so this is a meditation that you can take home with you today. So yes, we do live in a very, very beautiful world. In many, many ways, there is perfection in so many things. But perhaps there is also another side of the world. There's another side of life. Maybe we can say there's also a darker side of existence. And maybe we sometimes look around at the world and think, maybe it's not so perfect. Maybe it's not such a nice place. Maybe if I would have designed it, I would have designed it differently. Just to give you a sense of the other side of the world we're living in, here are some statistics. If you have food in your fridge, clothes on your back, and a roof over your head, you're richer than 75% of people in the world. That's amazing. You know, 75% of people in the world don't have a permanent residence that they can call a home. If you have money, if any of you by chance have a bank account, then you are in the top 8% of the world's wealthy people. Interesting. Most people don't have that kind of security. Most people don't have that kind of resource to lean back on. If you've never experienced the danger of battle, the agony of imprisonment or torture, or the horrible pangs of starvation, you're luckier than 500 million people right now. Right at this moment, on this particular day, 500 million people are experiencing this. And if you can read this message, which all of you definitely can, you're more fortunate than 3 billion people in the world who never had that opportunity to learn how to read or write because they were born and subjected to a place where they had no access to schooling. Now that's incredible. The world we're living in has big issues. And we kind of look at the world and we think there is so much imperfection in the world we live in today. There's global conflict and war. There's economic imbalance and uncertainty. The divide between rich and poor. I can't tell you the exact statistic, but I don't think I'd be too much off if I said 90% of the people, 90% of the wealth in the world is probably owned by about 2% of the people. That's the kind of gaps that we see in the world today. And there are huge problems on a health level, not just physical, mental health. The World Health Organization has confirmed that mental health is practically the most exponentially rising issue in the world today. Problems with diet and disease, cancer and so on, so forth. We have problems on an environmental level and sustainability, which are well documented. Crime, violence, and ethical issues, relationships. And all of us have experienced some of this to some extent. So while we live in a very beautiful world, a world in which we can say there is so much perfection, we also cannot deny that there are many, many problems, many, many issues, many, many imperfections in the world. So how does the ancient wisdom literatures, how do they help us to understand the world situation which surrounds us? And what wisdom can the ancient scriptures give us which can help us to kind of respond to this without being displaced in our consciousness, and how to respond to this so that we can actually make a positive change and a positive contribution? I'm going to read a verse to you. This is a verse from the Ishopanishad. Many of you are familiar that the Hindu body of scriptures are known as the Vedas. And in the Vedic body of knowledge, there are many, many books, perhaps hundreds and thousands, perhaps going into the millions of verses of wisdom. And it said that the first books in the Vedic corpus that begin to deal with spiritual subject matter are the Upanishads. And of the 108 Upanishads, the Sri Ishopanishad is said to be the foremost, the essence. The Sri Ishopanishad literally means that knowledge which brings you closer to God. And what I'm going to do today is just read for you the invocation from the Sri Ishopanishad, just to see how does it relate to this concept of the world being perfectly imperfect. So the Sanskrit, which is very, very beautiful, goes like this. Om Purnam Adapurnamidam Purnat Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Now this is this is an extremely interesting verse, and it's almost counterintuitive to what I've just spoken about, and that's what we'll be discussing today. The translation is this: the personality of Godhead is perfect and complete, and because he is completely perfect, all emanations from him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. Whatever is produced of the complete whole is also complete in itself. Because he is the complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. It's a very poetic translation. Very, very beautiful, very, very deep, very, very profound. If we were to boil this verse down into its essence, what it's basically teaching us is that God is complete and perfect. But not just that, the emanations from God, which are in two categories. The first category are the living entities, the living beings, the souls. They are also complete and perfect. But very, very interestingly, what's being said in this verse is that the other category of emanation from the complete whole divinity is this phenomenal world that we're living in now. And according to the Sri Ishopanishad, this world is perfect and complete. Now, that requires some thought, that requires some explanation. Because when we look at the world today, we may say, it doesn't look perfect and it doesn't look complete to me. In fact, if I was in charge, I'd like to change quite a few things because I think I can make it a better place. Can we make the world a better place? Should we make the world a better place? Is the world already perfect? How do we kind of approach this topic? And that's what I'll be discussing a little bit with you today. And I will leave some time for some questions and answers because I feel this subject does need some discussion between us. So is the world perfect and complete? Just to do a little survey here, look at the world and in your heart of hearts say, I believe the world is perfect and complete. How many would put their hands?
It depends.
It depends.
How you...
It depends how you define perfection, I guess. Yes. Okay?
Complete.
It's complete, but not perfect. How do you define complete? Yeah, okay. So, let's break it down a little bit more. Let's do that. Okay. In what sense is the world perfect? And I'm going to look at the definitions of completeness and perfection in a bit. But first, the Vedic teachers encourage us to answer one question before we understand why the world is perfect in the way it functions. There's one question which we have to ask ourselves first. I'm going to see whether you know what that question is. What question do you think needs to be answered first before we answer, is this world perfect?
Oh yeah, the harm. Oh yeah.
Who we are, okay.
And the harm.
Harmony.
Harmony?
Okay. There has to be harmony, okay. What question do you think is really important to answer before we make any judgment on whether this world is perfect and complete or not?
What do you define?
Okay, so that could definitely be that.
How do you define the world?
How do you define the world? Okay, you're getting closer to what I want. Yes?
Yes.
What is the purpose of the world? Unless we understand the purpose of something, how can we determine whether it's perfect or complete? Because something is perfect and complete in relation to what it's meant to exist for. And therefore, unless someone knows what the purpose of the world is, unless someone knows the purpose of why I'm here, unless someone knows the purpose behind the things that happen here, how can they then determine whether it's perfect or complete? And therefore, in the Vedic scriptures, the very first aphorism of Vedanta is Atato Brahma Jigyasa. That you're going to spend your whole life in this world, you're going to be subjected to so many different experiences in this world, you're going to have to navigate all the twists and turns and ups and downs of this world. So the first thing you should do, Atato, the very first thing you should do is understand, why does this world even exist? Because if you don't answer that question first, everything else will have the potential to bewilder, baffle, and potentially deflate, depress, and disenthuse you. And so first we must understand the purpose of this world. And that's really where the Bhagavad Gita, the Upanishads, the Bhagavad Gita, by the way, is also known, although it doesn't strictly come under the body of knowledge of the Upanishads, it's also known as a Upanishad. Sometimes the Bhagavad Gita is referred to as the Gita Upanishad, because the nature of its knowledge is very much to do with existential reality and distinguishing reality from illusion. So the Bhagavad Gita very much opens with this point of Krishna teaching the world, or teaching everyone, what the purpose of this world is. What is the purpose of this world? That is a good question to ask. Before I ask that question, I'll ask you another question. This was some years ago, did a survey to find out the top ways in which people in this world relax. Yeah. Can you guys give me some ideas of the top ways in which you think people relax in this world? You can just shout some things out. Listen to music. Go on a vacation. Go to a spa. I'm sure there's a good one here.
Purpose. And we're living up to our purpose, but we're living what by our passion or our purpose.
Okay, finding meaning and finding direction and living according to that, that helps you to relax. Wow, that's a very noble way to relax. Amazing. Yeah. Meditation. Yes. Taking a nap. Yes. Not in this session, but later you can do that. Yeah. Watch TV. Right. Yeah. Like the four, these are the four top ones. And I want you to just listen carefully and tell me whether you learn anything from this. They ask people, what do you do to relax? And the top four answers were, number one, go on holiday. Number two, watch TV. Number three, take intoxication. And number four, go to sleep. Very interesting. Go on holiday, watch a movie, take intoxication, go to sleep. What do you think each four of those activities all have in common?
You're escaping the reality of the world.
Exactly. Each one of those activities is an escape from our immediate reality. Now that's incredibly interesting, because the way people want to relax in this world is they almost want to escape their world. But the ironic thing is, when you go on holiday, at some point you have to come back. If you watch a movie, even if it's a Bollywood movie, at some point it has to end. When you take intoxication, you may forget your life, but there's always the morning after the night before. And when you go to sleep, it's great, but at some point, you have to wake up. So it's very interesting that people, their intuitive kind of pushing within them is to try to find a space beyond their world in which they can find respite. And that's incredibly telling. The Christian writer C.S. Lewis once said something incredible. C.S. Lewis said, "If I find in myself a desire which no experience of this world can fulfill, then I must conclude I was made for another world." It's very profound, actually. And so what the Bhagavad Gita says is that the purpose of this world is actually to get out of this world. The purpose of this world is actually to signpost us and usher us to another realm of existence. The purpose of this world is to help reveal certain realities of life to us so that we can enter into an eternal reality beyond the temporary, transitory things that we experience around us. And in that sense, the Bhagavad Gita says, and the Upanishads tell us, that the world is perfectly imperfect. Because all the imperfection, all the struggle, all the difficulty, all the ups and downs and the twists and turns and the problems and the issues and the obstacles and the stress is all there for a reason. It's all there to guide us to something higher. There's a beautiful Christian prayer where the person writes, "I prayed for strength and you kept sending me obstacles to overcome. I prayed for wisdom and you kept sending me problems to solve. I prayed for love and you kept sending me people who needed help." And then the person says, "God, you gave me everything I needed, but nothing that I wanted." So that was very profound, because sometimes the world serves us up a variety of experiences which we don't want, but which we may need in order to discover our truest essence and our truest potential. And so, this is a very, very beautiful picture. In the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna basically gives an analogy of the material world. And Krishna gives the analogy of a banyan tree. In Sanskrit, the banyan tree is known as Ashwatha. Ashwatha literally means, the Sanskrit etymology is, that which will not be here tomorrow. So Krishna says there's an original form of the banyan tree, which is the spiritual world. But as soon as there is material desire, the river or the body of water of material desire, then that original form of the spiritual world becomes reflected. And that reflection is basically the material world that we're in at the moment. And so what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita is that this material world is basically a reflection of the eternal reality. In other words, everything we find here is also existing in the eternal realm, but not in its perfect form. But the imperfection that we see here is ingeniously designed in order to reveal to us that this is not our true home. And so this is a very, very beautiful kind of depiction that is given. And Krishna goes, we won't have time today to go into the details, but Krishna beautifully explains how in the perverted reflection of that original tree. The roots are upwards, the branches go downwards, and we're hopping from one branch to another, and we're tasting fruit. Some are sweet, some are bitter. And in this way, Krishna gives a whole depiction of the material world that we're living in at the moment, and how it functions. Vedic teachers, sometimes when they talk about this world that we're living in, they use different analogies. One analogy given of this material world that we're living in now is that it's a prison. Another analogy that's often given to describe the world that we're living in now, or a metaphor, is that this world is like a hospital. And sometimes the analogy that's given for this material world is that it's a school. And each one of those are very, very interesting if you think about them on a continuum, like a prison, a hospital, and a school. Then on this side of the continuum, there's great discipline and control. And on this side of the continuum, there's inspiration and, you know, freedom to explore. But the common thing between all of those analogies of the world is that they're transforming something within us. If the material world is a prison, then it means each one of us have some level of deviant mentality within us which needs to be corrected. If the material world is a hospital, then it means each one of us have a certain amount of unhealthy consciousness that needs to come back to its proper state. And if the material world is compared to a school, then it means that there's a certain amount of ignorance within each one of us that needs to be eradicated. And so all of these analogies of the material world help us to understand that the experiences, the events, the emotions that we go through are meant to trigger a transformation within us, which then opens up our consciousness to a higher reality. And so,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna.